Hello, folks. This is Risk, the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share. I'm Kevin Allison, and this is the fourth time we're doing an episode like this, where the storyteller tells me a story in conversation. Now, so far, we've featured folks that I know personally on episodes like this one. There's, you know, a little bit of an ease about things when there's already a friendship there. But today's storyteller, Marianne, really took a risk by being the first-time storyteller to share a story with me in conversation this way. And it's an especially courageous example of sharing, too. This is a story about abuse. Physical, emotional, sexual. It's intense. And I was honored that Marianne felt comfortable enough to spend this time with me this way. The two of us talked a lot before and after she shared the story also, especially about how working on stories like this can be a part of one's ongoing growth process. The first person Marianne really shared this story with in detail was her husband, and that had been so helpful to her that at a certain point, she felt the urge to do some journaling about it, and that felt good too, so she kept at that, considering things from different angles, till she finally felt it might be helpful to share the story this way, here on Risk. I said to Marianne, yeah, you know, you don't have to feel like you've quote-unquote mastered whatever it is that a story is about to begin sharing it. Some stories ask questions, some are about mixed feelings, and a person can have new insight into any story anytime after telling it. So we're so grateful to Marianne for experimenting with us here. And I'll say more about our conversations before and after the recording session later in the episode. But for now, here is Marianne sharing a story with me that we call The Longest Walk Home.
So basically growing up, my mom was abusive to me. I just had a hard childhood, and everybody around me, it seemed like, had everything. I grew up in this like little suburban town in Long Island, and everybody just like had all the nice things and play dates and camp. And we didn't have much, and friends weren't allowed to sleep over. They weren't allowed to come over because they didn't want to be like seen at my house, or they were uncomfortable talking to my parents. So it was just, that's just like the vibe when I was growing up.
Wow.
So I was really looking forward to middle school because it was like an opportunity to be in a new school with more people, and not everybody like knew me as the kid with the deaf parents, you know? So I was excited for junior high. I wanted to have like this like stereotypical like high school, junior high life, have friends and be like a cheerleader chick, you know, like I wanted to like, I wanted to really fit in best I could it, and like to a fault. So when I started middle school, I had friends, I played soccer, I had a lot of soccer friends, you know, whatever, but it wasn't enough for me. So I met this girl in art class, Jessica. She was like badass kind of girl. And the way she just like talked to me and the other girls, she seemed very grown up, I guess. She had boobs. She was interesting to me because she was unlike my childhood friends, like my elementary school friends. She had like older friends, and she was talking about smoking weed. I was intrigued, I guess.
I get it. The sort of a badass, chip on the shoulder kind of a person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, I think she had a rough upbringing, and I think I saw that in her. Maybe I didn't realize that at the time, but like I felt like a connection to her, I guess, in a way.
Right. That you both had some hard stuff in your background.
Yeah.
So you started to become friends, and then what happened?
it was like everything I wanted. Like, we were friends. We'd hang out after school. She taught me how to like smoke cigarettes and inhale, you know, stupid stuff. We would go to they called it the ashtray, and it was like a dead end next to the school. And I thought it was like a secret cool spot. Like, we would just hang out there. And she introduced me to her girlfriends. There was like maybe five of us, and we would just hang out, have sleepovers, like all normal girl stuff. Uh-huh. You know, we would like talk about what boys we thought were cute and do whatever kind of stuff. But like, I definitely like was definitely like up her butt. Like, I did not want to lose her as a friend. And I think she started to realize that. And then eventually she started to like kind of like be a little mean to me. Mm. She started to say things like, oh, we're doing initiation. If you want to like stay in our group of friends, you have to do what I say. Mm. And so she would ask me to do a dare, do something like obnoxious or embarrass myself. And I would do it because I was like, I'm funny. I'm cool. I could do whatever this girl asked me to do.
Can you remember any of those?
I think I had to like go up to somebody and tell them I had a crush on them. I think I had to steal from Genevieve's, from Rite Aid. They used to keep the cigarettes like on the counter, and I would like go and I like soft packs, and I would like shove them up my sleeve, steal nail polish, or they would like start rumors about me. One time at a sleepover, they shaved my eyebrows off, wrote on my face with markers, like when I was sleeping. They would just like fuck with me pretty much.
Did you start to feel like you were like the punching bag of that group?
Yes. And like the other girls kind of were like looking at me like, are you really going to let her keep doing this? But no one was going to stick up for me because everyone was kind of scared of her because Jessica was crazy. And she was like definitely the leader of the group. But like, yeah, I mean, I have to take some responsibility because I could have walked away at any point and I didn't. And the more I did, the worse it got, where then it started to get like they would steal from me. They would do things and not tell me. And, you know, the thing I hated the most was being left out because obviously, like, I had issues about that. And it just got really mean. And then so like I had such a great like half of the school year being so like, oh, I made it. And then the other half of the school year kind of just feeling like an idiot, but also like couldn't go back to my old friends that I had ditched to like hang out with this group. I was in a weird spot. So I just kept going along with it.
Was this group also kind of reputed in the school as being a little bit, you know, like we're better? Or
yeah.
Yeah.
They were like people you would want at a party, but you wouldn't like take them to like your mom wouldn't like them because they dressed a little more mature and they hung out with boys a lot. We drank, we hung out with older kids, you know, things like that.
Right, right. Where did things go from there?
So then it just got to a point where I kind of shut down because I was lost and I didn't have anyone to like go to for help. And so I was just like, this is my life now. Like, they're just going to be mean to me. And this is what I have to do. And so besides Jessica, there was this other girl who was a grade older, Lisa. Lisa was like the scariest girl in school. Like, she would walk by people and like push them into lockers. She also had a very horrible upbringing. Like, she even kind of smelled a little bit like you knew she didn't come from a good home. And she was tough and she was mean and you just kind of stayed away from her. So when Lisa and Jessica were together, that was probably the worst for me because they were both like really mean. The school year had kind of ended and I was like hiding at home for the summer. I kind of didn't want to hang out at that point, just kind of trying to like hope that like I could start over again in eighth grade. So I was home and I got a phone call. We're at the schoolyard by your house. So this like elementary school where I grew up was like maybe 4 or 5 blocks from my house. So they were like, oh, we're at the schoolyard. Older people are here. So-and-so's brother is here. Why don't you come meet us and smoke weed? It'll be so much fun. I like knew that this was like a trap, but I ignored it. And I remember getting ready to go there and I put on my like back to school clothes like I wasn't supposed to wear yet kind of thing. And I got myself ready and I walked to the schoolyard thinking maybe I was wrong and that it was going to be fun. So I got to the schoolyard and sure enough, it was Lisa and Jessica standing there waiting for me. And like the next thing I know, they each like grab my arm and they pull me into the woods. So I had this diary, had a strawberry cover, had like strawberries printed on it. They stole it from me.
Mm.
They had brought me here that day to confront me about my diary because they read it. They said that I was a lesbian and that I had a crush on Jessica and that I needed to be punished for that.
Oh, that was their interpretation of.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And I like, honestly, at that point, I was 12. I was like 60 pounds. I was not there yet. I didn't have any experiences with boys or girls or anybody. I didn't know what I was or wasn't. I really just, I like was up this girl's butt and I just wrote in my diary, oh, she's so pretty. She, you know, like stupid shit like that I wrote.
Right, right.
But they took it as, oh, I was a lesbian. And to them, that was like the worst thing I could be.
Mm.
That was the world that I lived in Long Island. And that was the temperature of the people around me, unfortunately. So they wanted to confront me about my diary. And I was scared. Basically, they were like, well, you're a lesbian. Take off your clothes. And once they took my clothes off, they started like kicking me and punching me.
They took all of your clothes off?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. They threw my underwear like over a fence. Like they ripped my jeans, my sneakers, my new sneakers, threw everything. Yeah, I was naked. So they just like started punching me and punching me. And then the girl Lisa punched me right in the eye.
Wow.
I didn't fight back. I kind of had an out of body experience. Like I didn't even really feel pain in that moment. I froze and I was crying.
Uh-huh. Do you remember if you said anything? Like,
I think I said, I'm not a lesbian. I'm sorry. Just leave me alone. I just remember like looking up at the sky and the trees and like really thinking they were going to kill me. Like wow. I was scared.
Oh,
I was
my
really
God.
Scared. Yeah. And I was also just like, I was so lost. I don't know.
Yeah. And so you got punched in the eye.
Yeah.
And then what happened?
Then they were like, oh, you need a lesbian haircut. And so they started burning my hair. There was like broken glass and they were just like cutting my hair off. And then they had a lighter and they were burning it. And that smell, like, you know, the smell.
Wow.
Then they just stopped and they were like, okay, we have to kill you because you're going to tell on us. I was like, no, I'm not going to tell anybody. And they're like, okay, we're not done. So the front of the school had a parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
And we were in the parking lot. And for whatever reason, we went inside the school.
Mm.
And right when you walk in those doors, there is like an office. And then across from the office is an auditorium. And we ended up in the auditorium. And like, it was very surreal. Oh, I did have like some semblance of clothes back on at this point. I think I had like the jeans back on and a sports bra on. And that was it. And no barefoot.
Wow.
But I must have looked like, I can't even imagine what I looked like. And they were like, okay, the last thing you have to do is you have to go on the stage and you have to masturbate because you're a lesbian and you, this is what, and I was like, I didn't even understand what that word like meant at that time. Like I knew a little bit what it meant, but I was not there like developmentally yet. Like I was petrified. I was like, what?
Wow. They said you're going to go up on stage and you're going to masturbate. And you weren't quite sure exactly even what that word meant.
Yes. I knew it meant like to touch yourself, but I didn't understand. You know, they were like, oh, you love Jessica so much. Go right ahead. Like, you must do this every day. So I did. I went on stage and I stuck my hand down my pants and I wiggled my butt. Like, I didn't even know what to do. And I was like, okay, I did it. And like, and then I ran out of the school because I was like, enough. Like, I had had enough. So they like followed me back out and they were like, okay. give us a head start. We'll leave.
Mm.
And they left. And then I started walking home.
Did you still just...
Excuse me, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
It's just, you know, it's hard to go back there. So I walked home. Just give me 1 second.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. I knew I was going to cry, but I was really trying not to.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No.
So I walk home, and as I'm walking home, my neighbor's dad saw me, and he was like, "Marianne?" And I was like, "Hi." And I had told him that 3 girls jumped me in the schoolyard.
Uh-huh.
I was like, "I don't know who they are." So he took me back to his home, and he called the cops. And the police came, and they couldn't get in touch with my parents. So they asked me questions, and they wanted me to go to the hospital. The police needed my parents' permission to take me. So as I'm walking from my neighbor's house to my home, when we got to the corner of where I live, the 2 girls were there.
Oh.
I guess they were kind of creeping to see what I was going to do, if I was going to go home, you know. I guess they just wanted to, like, watch. So they saw me. I was with the police. And they were like, "Oh, Marianne, are you okay? What happened?" I just looked away. And I just kept walking. So then I went home. Did go to the hospital. Nothing was broken. I just had the bruises. And I never told the police or my parents who it really was. And I signed a police report. And I remember being like, "I'm going to go to jail because I falsified this document." And
it's kind of remarkable that they saw you with the police and spoke that way, almost like they might have confidence that you wouldn't have said it was them, and that they could start creating a different reality if the police did ask. Yeah. Wow. Gosh. And so, do you remember how you were processing things in the few days afterwards or the week or so afterward?
I was numb. And I was dreading going back to school in the fall. But yeah, I remember just being numb and also, like, embarrassed. I didn't have anyone to go to. So I was just, like, very alone and sad about it.
Yeah, because your former friends, you'd kind of drifted away from after becoming in.
Oh, yeah, I ditched them. Yeah.
Yeah.
I totally ditched them.
Yeah.
I had some friends that were good friends, and even their families looked out for me. I just didn't realize it at the time, but, like, they didn't deserve for me to, like, ditch them. You know, I kind of made my own bed in a way, even though I didn't deserve what happened to me. I could have gotten off the train a lot sooner than I had.
Wow. Sometimes when I hear about this kind of behavior on the part of those girls, it strikes me as, what the fuck? Why would someone do that, you know?
Yeah. They both came from very troubled homes. I mean, the one girl, I believe, was in, like, a home for troubled girls.
Yeah, there's a sort of a, I don't know, a boomerang thing, you know, that hurt people hurt people.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll be right back. We're back.
What was it like after high school?
So after high school, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I wanted to go to college. I knew I had to pay my own way through college. So I just worked as much as I could. I waitressed at this, like, local restaurant for years. I was always there. I just saved money and saved money. I took some courses at community college. I thought I wanted to do, like, forensic psychology because I loved Silence of the Lambs, and I wanted to do that, and I didn't really know what I wanted to do, but I wanted to just go explore. I wanted to just do new things, and so I went to community college, and then I started hanging out with people from work and people outside of school because now I didn't have to go to school anymore. I started playing poker. I ended up meeting my current boss at poker. And I was 20 years old, and he was like, "Hey, you know, we could really use someone just to do filing. I know you're kind of figuring your life out, college, whatever, but you know, I'd love to have you just come in and just help us out in the office in Queens. And I was like, yeah, okay, sure. So I started working there. Somebody went on maternity leave and I kind of took their spot. I took to it. I really liked it. It was, I felt very professional. And, you know, I'm still with this company 20 years later. And now I'm the director of operations. You know, my boss allowed me to get my degree. I went and got my college degree. I did have a little stint where I thought I was going to work in media. So I did get my degree in media and communications. And then I interned at News 12. And I realized it just wasn't for me. But it was an awesome experience. But I realized, like, I wasn't a news girl. It wasn't going to be me. But my boss said, listen, if you stay, I will make you director. And that's what happened. So, and then I met my now husband. We've been together 13 years. And he gave me a lot of confidence. And it was, you know, a slow climb. But, like, I started to put myself back together again. I started playing soccer again as an adult. I still play soccer. And so I've kind of found all the things that I always loved. And when I became more myself, it was so much easier because I had for so long tried to be someone else.
Mm. Wow. And how do you look back at how you processed all of that over time?
I think I buried it deep down inside. It would come out in little hiccups every now and then. Like, I think I had like a little PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely always felt insecure around other women, making new adult friends, women friends. Girls are mean, catty. So I think that I was sensitive to things that I didn't need to be sensitive to for a long time. But I also, like, the memories would come back to me and I would think of it. And then I would think of like how I was so young.
Mm.
And I kind of forgave myself a little bit because I really always felt like I deserved what happened to me.
Oh.
Because I did never stop them. You know, it escalated so far to that day at the schoolyard. It could have been stopped had I spoke up for myself or was more confident. Or so I always felt very responsible for what happened to me. But I also now understand that I did not deserve that.
Yeah. You were in a fight, flight, or freeze sort of state of confusion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted something that I thought I wanted because, like, I saw it on TV, you know, I wanted like a group of friends. I wanted this perfect life. And I thought I had something great. And I sacrificed like who I was to get that. And it kind of backfired.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I didn't want that event to like define me.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want it to be my crutch. I didn't want it to be like, oh yeah, that happened to her and she's never the same. Like, you know, if I ended up homeless or something, like people would be like, oh, I get it. It's part of me and I can't ignore that, but I didn't want it to define me at all.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, at the same time that it was as traumatic as it was, it's also ridiculously, insanely stupid junior high behavior out of control.
Yes, 100%. Yeah. Mean girl shit, for sure.
Yes. Mean girl shit where you're like, what the fuck? Wait, what now? Sometimes when I think of some of the pranks I pulled when I was a kid, or I even think of like the group of friends that I ended up in for a little while where there was a kid in the group that got picked on a lot. Junior high, that era can be really, really messy.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I'm so glad you've shared it with us because to look at you and hear from you today, you seem so well put together. You know what I mean? Like,
thanks.
Yeah, you seem like you're so healthy and smart and like capable.
Oh, thank you.
And like, you seem like you've done great.
Thank you.
It's really an inspiration.
That's so nice.
Yeah, to hear about someone who kind of like took care of themselves,
yeah,
through all that, made it out so well.
Thanks. Oh, that's so nice. Thank you.
It's fabulous. And that is that. We are so grateful to Marianne, a first-time storyteller. daring to share on the show that way. I'll tell you, Marianne wrote to us after that recording session, and she said, I fought so hard to not be myself because I thought I was not good enough. When I then became something I thought I wanted to be, it was horrible. It took a long time to find myself again, but the journey made me stronger for it. This story was hard for me to tell, and also, I couldn't wait to get it out. The process has been really cool. I'm turning 40 in a few months, and I've never felt better or more like my true self. I've always enjoyed writing, but was always nervous about putting things out into the world. Writing this story and sharing it has been really healing, and I think the last step in letting this all go. It made me want to write more, so maybe I will. I have more to say, for sure. I'm so thrilled that Marianne feels that way. You know, one of the things that haunts me about some of the stories we've run are the cases where a person didn't have much support, as much support as they could have used. You know, if Marianne had been able to have a better relationship with her parents, if some of the girls who witnessed some of the bullying had spoken up, if the faculty had been more aware of it, Marianne might have felt much more comfortable reaching out for support. It's also tragic when you think that all three girls at the center of that story were, I think it's safe to say, dealing with a lot of hurt at that time. I mean, it does tend to be that hurt people hurt people. And so I hope that the two girls who bullied Marianne have also been able to experience some healing in the years since. It's fascinating to me personally that someone like Marianne, who is not gay, was bullied about being gay anyway. Meanwhile, much of the self-work that I do is healing around the fact that I grew up terrified that I would be bullied for being gay, even though I was lucky enough not to be. I ended up being my own worst bully instead, with my self-esteem issues that came out of all of that worry, all that dread. It was the culture I was growing up in, where so much homophobia was in the air all around. So it fucked me up anyway. So I'm grateful that stories like Marianne's can help spread more understanding, not just about how destructive bullying can be, but also what a long and winding road that healing can be. And with that said, there's only one more thing to say. Folks, today's the day. Take a risk.